Thank you. Marie and I are happy to be here today presenting on behalf of Dr. John Tempty, who couldn't make it the way all the way up to Anchorage, unfortunately. And before I begin, I want to point out Tom Haupt, who somehow did not make his way onto our title slide, but we might field some questions to him later. This presentation. Are you? Yeah, somewhere.
All right.
You're wearing a red shirt, so it makes sense that you got
That's
dropped.
That's true. And then we have another team member here today also, Ashley, back there with our CDC team. So this study would not have been possible without the efforts of our very large team. We work with members from the CDC, Wisconsin Department of Public Health, Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene, and our team at the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health in Madison. So I'm going to jump in with a bit of background first, and then we'll hit the moral of the story in the words of Val Davidson from yesterday. And then Marina's going to jump in and do some of our data explanation and our findings from this project. So we're going to look at the role of rapid influenza diagnostic tests. So RIDTs, they use using nasal swabs, are point-of-care tests. So these rapid diagnostic tests are amino assays that identify the presence of influenza A and B, a viral nucleoprotein antigens in respiratory specimens. So, and these are displayed in quantitative in a quantitative way, so it's a very clear positive or negative when you have these tests done. There are a bunch of advantages for using these diagnostic tests, the rapid tests. They tend to be very quick. They have really nice time frames. I think the definition, they have to be under 30 minutes when running them. They are relatively inexpensive. To put that into perspective, the rapid test that we use for our studies is about $25 per test that we do. In comparison with our RT-PCR, that is about $120, and it does take a significant more time to get that done. Let's see. So in some settings, such as outbreak investigations, the confirmation of RIDT results with RT-PCR is essential. So jumping into the moral of the story, so why would this be important or how could this be used? So RIDTs, again, can be beneficial for public health purposes, particularly when working with large populations and limited resources. So we have a couple of scenarios where this could be used, looking at border crossing sites where you have large populations moving into an area. And doing that rapidly. This would help make educated decisions on who should receive further testing. And it's time, again, time efficient. 15 minutes for a rapid test versus 3.5 hours for one of the fastest RT-PCR tests on the market. Look here. Again, going with time, doing screenings at major airports. All of you, I assume, flew to Anchorage, unless you're from the area. There's not a lot of time when you're in the airport. Things are scheduled very tightly together. Very beneficial to have a 15-minute test versus a 3.5-hour test. You don't want to have to be missing flights, restructuring flights, and handing out food vouchers for people who are missing things. This could be potentially hugely beneficial in a pandemic situation, given our increasingly interconnected world. Something we use right now and are looking at is the confirmation of RIDT results with RT-PCR in long-term care facilities. Currently in Wisconsin, so standard infection protocol in the long-term care facilities utilizes surveillance, prophylaxis, and prevention. Surveillance is largely symptom-based. Maureen and myself interviewed, we did a survey of over 400 LTCFs in Wisconsin. So these individual clinics or these long-term care facilities usually use off-site testing for influenza. So they have a patient who fits the criteria for a testing. Specimens are collected and they're sent off either to the state lab of hygiene or a local hospital. The downside to this, even though the results are accurate, is it can take up to 3 days and occasionally longer than that. And this is a vulnerable population, so it is important to reduce the chance of exposure between patients in these facilities. The highest rates of influenza-associated primary respiratory and circulatory hospitalizations are in these patients. So it reduces these high case or high risk cases. And then you can implement these prevention protocols a lot more quickly. So within long-term care facilities, RIDTs can be used to quickly identify influenza virus infections as a cause of respiratory outbreak. So a positive RIDT result from one or more ill patients with suspected influenza can support decisions to promptly implement infection protocol and control measures for influenza outbreaks. And as soon as possible for any sort of implication or implementation is really helpful because these spread very quickly. So our goal of the study was to validate the use of rapid nasal swab specimens, for confirmatory testing using a population from which nasal specimens and nasopharyngeal or oral pharyngeal specimens were routinely and systematically collected for primary care and influenza surveillance. Just a general definition, so the residual nasal swab, so you'll see that listed over and over again, the RNS, will be the leftover nasal swab. So any rapid test is usually a nasal swab. They can do other collection methods, but this is what we primarily use, and then you're putting it in a lysis buffer situation. And we save all of that, and that's what we're looking at, the waste swab. Usually this is just thrown away. So we're seeing if there's a potential for this. So looking back at the potential uses of RIDTs in a bunch of different scenarios, it doesn't take a huge amount of time to do two swabs. But if you're swabbing hundreds and hundreds of people, those minutes do add up. So this is beneficial if it would work. So we have the benefit of already having in place a study that was regularly collecting nasal and nasopharyngeal or pharyngeal specimens. So we are a member of the Influenza Incident Surveillance Project, WIISP. We are part of the CDC and CSTE supported larger IISP. We have some IISP members up here. And we work to describe the incidence and presentation of influenza and other viruses associated with acute respiratory infections in representative primary care populations in the state of Wisconsin for us. We are now wrapping up our seventh year in the study. We have 5 area clinics that do regular collections. We have an excellent working relationship with these sites. We get good work done, and we can manipulate things as needed, and which we did for this particular study here. So we have about 75 to 80 participating clinicians plus laboratory staff at these 5 sites. So the data that we're going to look at is from July 1st, 2014 through June 30th, 2015. This is looking at both influenza-like illnesses and acute respiratory infections. And then we also look at laboratory-confirmed influenza. So a general explanation of the study in clinic. A patient is identified by a clinic staff member, either a PA, a doctor, medical assistant. And so those patients have to have 2 of the following symptoms, fever, sore throat, cough, runny nose, or stuffy nose. And they are 2 specimens are then collected from those patients. So we do a nasal swab, and then they have a choice of an NP or an OP swab. In clinic, they are given a rapid test, and that takes about 15 minutes once it arrives in the laboratory. Great incentive to get patients to participate, because they'll find out the time of the visit if they are flu positive. Then we send the swabs off to the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene. So the NP or OP swab is tested on a multiplex. It's a Luminex test, and they get a whole viral panel back in about 2 weeks to the main clinic for educational purposes. And then aliquots of residual specimens and specimen extracts are stored at negative 70 degrees Celsius at the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene for possible shipment to the CDC, if we want to look at those further. And that was useful for the sub-study that we did. These are our area sites for the IISP project. We have, I think this is the wrong map. So these ones were right in here, so it's going to zoom in. All right, so we have in the top corner northeast, we have Wingra in the center, and then Oregon, Verona, and Belleville. So we have a good mix of both urban centers and more rural clinics. Gives an excellent, very diverse population to look at, great demographics. So all of these sites with their rapid testing machine, it is also connected to a Wi-Fi network, so every night our SOFIA RIDT results are reported to a cloud server, and so we can download those, and it's really nice for any sort of data work, and it's effortless. It just does it automatically. So looking at patient demographics, we have a lot of diversity spanning a wide age spectrum. One that we always like to point out in our presentations is females aged 30 to 39. Those in clinics tend to be mothers with school-aged children. You'll notice that they're pretty standard with good balance between male and female up until about the age of 20, 29, and then kind of tail off. This is pretty standard demographics for clinic patients. So the waste and nasal swabs, so we did on-site testing, Quidel Sophia testing. So we changed protocol slightly. The nasal swab and any unused lysis buffer, instead of being thrown away, was put into a separate viral transport media tube. And that was sent with the one that is standard used for our MPOP swab, and that was sent to the State Laboratory of Hygiene. And I will hand this over to Maureen, and she will go over some of the data.
Hi. I'll be talking about the results and some data analysis. So as Emily mentioned, we had 979 patients sampled and tested during the 2014-15 flu year. Of those, we selected a random subset of residual nasal swabs for testing and comparison to the PCR done by the NP with the NPOP swab. We chose pretty evenly between three categories. We chose 79 from influenza A positive, 60 from influenza B positive, and 60 from influenza A and B negative. We did see about four from the flu B Victoria strain, but most were Yamagata, and we saw no H1N1 that year. It was all H3N2 as far as flu A goes. And our sample population was very similar to our total tested population, as we will see in the next slide. Our sample population is that top row in each table, and the total tested population is in the second row. So you can see the ILI presence, the age, gender ratio, onset of illness, and illness severity are all very comparable. So this was a very good representative sample. So what we were really looking at was the sensitivity and specificity of the residual nasal swab when tested by PCR as compared to the gold standard, which is the NPOP done by PCR. And PCR also allows us to detect viral load in the form of the CT value or cycle threshold value. So we were able to see how much virus we were getting from each swab and see if that had an effect on the sensitivity and specificity. So these are some of our sensitivity and specificity results from the residual nasal swab. Moderate sensitivity was maintained around 77 to 87%. Specificity was very high. You might notice that the combined A and B specificity is lower than A or B singularly, and that's just due to the nature of our sample and subset. So there were just less true negatives for A and B, so it's a lower denominator and a lower specificity. And we did look at whether there was a difference between comparing residual nasal swabs to NP or OP, and there was no difference. We got the same results regardless. And these are some of our CT values. Our NPOP was significantly lower in CT value than our residual nasal swab by about 2.44 units. Our average for NPOP was about 25.5, and our average for residual nasal swabs was about 28. So some of the limitations of this study. We only looked at 1 year of data in one location. We only used one RIDT platform, the Quidel Sophia, so we don't know how other platforms would perform. And like I mentioned before, we had a limited variation of flu that year, so not much Victoria strain and no H1N1 strain. So public health implications. Discarded nasal swabs, or RNS, can be a very valuable source of material for confirmatory testing. And those higher CT values we talked about before could be for a variety of reasons. A couple might be less nucleic acid due to less cellular material in the nasal passage as opposed to NP or OP areas, or the loss of viral titer over time or due to the freeze-thaw of the sample. So our results just kind of provide performance characteristics for RNS specimens used for secondary testing by PCR, and also guidance for future protocols using RNS to confirmatory test for influenza. And I'd just like to recognize everybody on our study team, Department of Public Health, Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene, CDC, and everyone else who made IASP possible. Any questions?
We have about 4 minutes for questions.
Hi, thank you. I'm Nisha Alden from Colorado, and I was wondering if you looked at the difference across the time frame of the season, so when influenza prevalence was higher or lower, depending on the time in the season?
So for the specimens that we selected, we did it across the entire year, and it was a blind selection. We were just choosing from flu cases. So when we were having flu positives that were selected, obviously those ones would have fallen more in that influenza season, but we weren't choosing primarily for that. But we wanted to have a good balance and also look at just how successful the test was, because there is always a higher chance with rapid tests of false negatives and true negatives.
Right at both ends of the season. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
I have a question. Yeah. So first of all, great work. This is really exciting. The next question is about, so you used ISP specimens. One of the added benefits of those specimens is we get more detailed epidemiological information. Mm-hmm. Did you control at all for the time between symptom onset and specimen collection?
So for ISP, and our team knows this, but symptoms onset has to be within seven days. We do get a lot of variability. There's a lot of sloppiness in clinical practice, which is nice for our study and for studies like this. So it is on we're trusting the patient who's coming in that their symptom onset was within 7 days. So that we're not looking for. We did rule out anyone who came in and it was more than 7 days. And occasionally we'll get clinical sheets from patients with specimens, and it might be 22 days, and that just happens. So I don't think we use any of those. So they were within 1 to 7 days, but I think it was a good variety.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Great, well, thank you so much.